Welcome to Fastball Fantasy Baseball. I'm your host, Taylor Tarter. I've been playing fantasy baseball for 10 years now, and I'm a lifetime fan of baseball. The last few seasons playing fantasy, I've really honed in on the analytical data, specifically from FanGraphs and Baseball Reference, and I've devoted a lot of time to learning what the different stats mean, why they're significant, which ones to focus on and avoid, and which ones are most helpful to fantasy baseball strategy. And the past few seasons playing fantasy have been my most successful, and now I'm just trying to share the wealth. So without further ado, let's get into it. Over the course of the season, I'll be covering a lot of topics with a special focus on underlying metrics that set some players apart from others, which are especially useful to fantasy baseball managers. For batters, I'll be covering topics like hard contact rate, BABIP, and line drive, ground ball, and fly ball ratios, as well as ground ball and home run versus fly ball stats. I'll also be covering some of my favorite pitching stats to look for, including strikeout per nine rate, strikeout percentage, FIP, and Sierra. Throughout the season, I'll cover even more. Subscribe and download to keep up with the analysis and topics throughout the season. First though, let's talk about draft strategy. For me, draft prep is a multi-step process that starts early in the off season. As soon as projections start popping up across different outlets, some of my go-to websites for off-season prep include ESPN's Fantasy Baseball Projections, as well as anything by Eric Carabel or Tristan Cockcroft. I'm also constantly on FanGraphs and Baseball Reference, scouring for any piece of data that's going to give me an edge on draft day. So step one for me, the very first thing that I do is I go back and look at last year's stats. And I don't only look at surface stats, I'm looking at hard contact rate, home run fly ball ground ball ratios, contact percent, BABIP, all of which I'm going to cover in future podcasts. I'm going to FanGraphs to find all that data, and you can do that in a few ways. I like to choose from the batting and pitching leaders at the top of the page and then sort through that way. And for batters, mostly what I'm looking for is the batted ball stats. For pitchers and for batters a little bit, I'm looking also at the advanced stats. I also like to go position by position to help organize my research a little more. To see advanced stats on an individual player, all you have to do is click on their name and then you can sort, or you can search for them in the search bar and go through that way. I also like to use Baseball Reference to check out batting splits, home and away, how to batter do at different spots in the order, things like that. I'm looking for a few things as I research, and basically I'm trying to answer these questions. Who's hitting the ball hard? Are they hitting it hard and producing good hits? Are they getting lucky, unlucky, or are they matching what they've done before? Are they more likely to be better or worse this year based on their lineup? Are they on a new team? Are they coming in injured? Did they have an injury last year? Whatever. And did they take a step in the right direction or wrong direction with contact? Basically, I want to decide if I trust what a player did last year and then decide how I think they'll do this year. But again, this is a first step in a long process. So a sneaky player to watch this year is Starlin Castro. I have him higher up on my board than I think a lot of the other managers in my league will. But the reason for that is that he had excellent metrics last year. And he improved in a lot of areas, specifically hard contact rate and contact percent. I think he's a sleeper this year at second base because he's going to be undervalued. He played for the Marlins last year, so he was off the radar, and now he's on the Nationals, which is a team that, despite having won the World Series last year, haven't been getting much attention or much hype. He has a hitting coach, Kevin Long, that has helped Juan Soto become one of the best players in the game in a year and a half. And Castro is now in a lineup in which he'll produce one way or another. If he hits third, he'll probably have more runs. If he hits fifth, he'll probably have more RBI. Either way, the guy's going to produce. Finally, I'll start a spreadsheet organized by positions and tiers, and I'll start plugging in players in an order that I would draft them. For example, tier one for my catchers includes Realmuto, Sanchez, Grandal, and Garver in that order, because those are the best players at that position, in my opinion, based on the stats that I've chosen to focus on as important. Tier two for catchers includes guys like Contreras, Perez, Ramos, and a few others. These are guys who I like but aren't the absolute best. And keep in mind that not every position is going to have the same amount of players as another position in the same tier. For example, my tier one for second baseman only includes Jose Altuve because I believe he's in a class of his own as a hitter at that position. It's up to you to organize the players how you want, remembering that as you continue your research, you're going to be switching a lot of these guys around. My second step is simple. Read a lot and wait. Projections will come out. I use a mix of them. I don't like to focus on one particular projection from one particular source. I like to get different ideas from different people and combine them to help me get a leg up on the rest of the guys in my league. I check out a projection called Zips and another one called The Bat, which you can find on FanGraphs. And I use the ESPN projections to help me finalize who I like the most, who I won't draft, and in what order I want to sort my players. This might take a few days, so take your time with it. You'll want to do this as soon as possible in your scouting process to give yourself enough time to look through each player's stats, make notes, do mock drafts. So if you're listening to this now, you should finish this podcast and get into researching immediately. Once I've combed through the projections and have analyzed the underlying metrics, I begin to make decisions on players that I'm going to target, players that I will not draft, and players who I think are under the radar, my sleepers. In a lot of drafts, the players who you choose will depend on a lot of things. Is it a keeper draft? What pick do you have? Who's on the board? How many teams are in your league, etc.? The factors are endless. My league, for example, is an 18 keeper league. We have one catcher, five outfielders, seven pitchers, five bench spots, and two injured list spots among all the rest of the typical slots. And each team gets to keep four of their previous players from the last year. It's not a typical structure, so it's really important that you know what type of league you're in. Is it points, head-to-head, roto? Is the roster construction standard? Are you in a two-catcher league? Is it four outfielders? Do you have to have so many starting pitchers versus relievers? Is it dynasty? Is it keeper? What are the different rules of your league? You should also know what type of draft you're going to be doing. Is it a snake? Is it an auction? Because that'll make a difference in draft strategy too. My league, for example, is a snake draft, and we organize the draft order based on your final standings from last year reversed. So like the NFL draft, the worst team from the previous year will draft first and the best team will draft last. So for me this year, I'm keeping Cody Bellinger, Christian Yelich, Xander Bogaerts, and Trey Turner. That's impacting who I'm going to draft early. And because it's ESPN, there's a good chance that I won't be able to slot in Cody Bellinger at first base, for example, where I would like to draft him or slot him in so that I can draft an outfielder early. So my first pick in this case is likely to either be a first baseman, a third baseman, or a second baseman. Some players I'm absolutely targeting based on the data that I've analyzed are Anthony Rizzo, Gleyber Torres, and Chris Bryant. Now, these players are high on my draft board, but they're also guys who are high on a lot of draft boards. So they might not be there. This is why you have your spreadsheet or whatever you're using to keep track of your players that you're interested in. That way, if somebody who I like gets taken, I have some backup options. One thing I also like to do as a second step in sorting my players to help me make decisions on draft day is to assign each player a color on my spreadsheet. And you can choose whichever colors you want. I also have a key on the spreadsheet in case I forget what color means what, but I've been doing it so long that I don't really need it. But it's pretty straightforward. Green means go. I want to draft that player. Red means no. I do not want to draft. Do not draft this person, even if they're at the top of the list on the draft board. Yellow I have as a sleeper. Blue is a player being kept on another team. And for me, orange is a player I'm keeping. And so on draft day, I use this to help me make quick decisions. We only have a minute and a half to choose a player, and so this helps me make those decisions really quick. As players are chosen, I delete them from the list, and I leave on the ones that I choose. I also do this for pitchers as well. Something you should do in addition to all of this is make notes on your spreadsheet or again, wherever you're doing you're keeping track of your players. For my batters, I'm looking for players who will produce stats across the board. Sometimes, like this year, I'm gonna focus on players who hit for power because generally they're at least a three category player. You're getting runs, home runs, and RBI. But I'll use an asterisk to mark a player who I think will be like a 2020 guy, which means 20 home runs, 20 steals, or somebody who I think will get really close to that. One player like that is Fernando Tatis Jr., who it's very likely will be kept in my league. He's going to be one of the best players in baseball this year and in fantasy. But this year, I'm not too worried about players who hit for average. If I can get players to fill up three columns in the batting category each week, that works for me. Remember, my league is head-to-head, so we have five batting categories we're trying to win and five pitching categories. If I can take three of those batting categories each week, I'm putting myself in a good position each week to win. Then I need pitchers who will fill up three of their categories. And again, if I can do that, I'm hopefully winning at least six categories out of 10 each week. Somebody on my do not draft list is Gene Segura. And so he's one of those guys who hits for average, but that's about it, right? I want guys who hit for power, who have good contact numbers. And Segura is not one of those guys. His hard contact numbers are not very good, and he grounds out a lot. 50% of his hits, of the balls he makes contact with, are grounders. So this is one of those times where you really want to do your research and make sure that you know who you're drafting. Now, I've been talking a lot about sorting batters. I also sort my pitchers too, but I do it a little differently. Later this season, I'll focus on how I analyze pitching data and what stats I focus on to help me make pitching decisions, who to pick up, who to start, when to start them. My pitching tiers are divided by projected ERA. I have players who are projected for under 270 ERA, and really it's only one guy, Jake DeGrom. And then I have players who are projected between 270 and 330, 330 and 360, 360 and 390, and 390 and 420 ERAs. Generally, I'm not drafting a pitcher with a higher projected ERA than 420. I go through the exact same process as hitters when doing my research. What did they do last year? Can it be repeated? What factors, if any, will change their output this year, etc. I'll look at the data and the projections and make my decisions. I'll use my color coding to sort them and make decisions. I use the same process when I look at starting pitchers and relief pitchers. And on my spreadsheet, they're in different sections, so I don't lump them all together. As with batters, I'm looking for pitchers who will produce in multiple categories. My league uses quality starts instead of wins. That's another quirk for my league. So that's something I'll pay attention to. I'm also making notes of which pitchers are likely to strike out 200 plus batters, and I'll use an asterisk to mark them. Sometimes I'll choose a pitcher who I think will strike out a lot of batters at the expense of their ERA, if I think they'll also get me some quality starts. A great example of a player like this from last year who I also like going into this year is Lance Lynn. Knowing this though, I'll also have to balance it out with low ERA pitchers. And depending on how the draft shakes out, I either want two or three starters that I think are good for 200 or more strikeouts. Or, you know, if the draft isn't going my way, I'm not getting a lot of those guys, I may shift my focus to stocking up on relievers. And so the strategy behind targeting relievers is that if you can get a couple of the top relief pitchers, you can expect to win three categories each week: saves, ERA, and whip. And it's a risk, but if you combine that strategy with drafting your power hitters, again, you're likely locking down six categories out of 10 each week and putting yourself in a good position to be a fantasy baseball champion. If you're in a points league or in a roto league, you know, your strategy might have to shift a little bit, but that's something we can address later on in the year. So finally, I'll start doing mock drafts. Whatever website you use to draft your players, they should have a place where you can mock draft. It's basically like a practice draft, doesn't count, but it's good for research. My league is on ESPN, so I use their mock draft lobby. It's a great place to practice your strategy, see what works and what doesn't, and plan out what you're going to do on draft day. It's a little difficult with a keeper league, but you know, do what you can. Make sure to practice with your spreadsheet, with whatever you're researching with. And so here's how my first mock draft looked. My first four slots would have been for my keepers, so I had to select a few different, but I tried to keep them similar. So I have the third pick in my draft this year. Unfortunately, that meant I didn't have a great year last year. But my first pick is Yelich. He's one of my keepers. I also ended up with Trey Turner. And I had to pick Bryce Harper instead of my keeper, who would have been Cody Bellinger, and then Gleyber Torres instead of my keeper, Xander Bogaerts. So my first pick after my keeper rounds was Anthony Rizzo, who I like a lot. He has great metrics, plays in a great park, and he's in a great lineup. I followed him up with Shane Bieber, who I'm totally happy to have as my number one starter. I had him all last year. I was really happy. You know, he's a guy that's going to get 200 strikeouts somewhere in, you know, mid three ERA. I'm totally fine with that. I'm not too happy with the players that followed. I drafted Keston Hiura at second base and Eddie Rosario in the outfield. I'd have liked it if someone higher on my list at those positions was available, like Max Muncy or George Springer, or, you know, if there was another pitcher there, like Verlander or Morton, I would have drafted guys like that, but that wasn't the case. And I'm trying to follow, you know, a strategy that I have set for myself. Over the next couple of rounds, I stocked up on pitching, both relief and starting pitching. I picked up guys like Luis Castillo, Lucas Giolito, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Robbie Ray, all projected for 200 strikeouts. So with Shane Bieber, my starters are great. I feel really comfortable. I like it a lot. I also picked relievers who I believe will be high impact, whether they get traded somewhere or not. Brad Hand, Will Smith, Nick Anderson, who is a big-time sleeper pick at relief pitcher for Tampa Bay, Taylor Rogers, and Archie Bradley. With this group, I'd feel confident that I'd win at least three of those pitching stats each week, which, again, is a good strategy. My batting is a part of my team where I felt the weakest. I waited too long to get a solid third baseman. I ended up with Miguel Sano, like, in the back half of my draft. I also ended up with Kyle Tucker, who could be a 2020 guy. He could also get demoted to the minors. Kyle Seager, who has been good but has had a couple kind of lousy seasons. Hunter Dozier, who did pretty well last year. The metrics are good on him. And Hunter Renfroe, who, again, has a lot of potential, but he's in a crowded outfield in Tampa. So I'd still like to get a little more pop across the board. And you know, these mock drafts are learning experiences. So my takeaway from this draft is that I need to go for big bats first. Pitching will be there. So, you know, do a mock draft, make sure it fits the type of draft you're going to be doing in your league. Make sure it fits with roster construction and how many teams are in your league. And, you know, keep all of those things in mind. You know, you might have to draft a little differently depending on what kind of league you're doing. Well, that's all for today, folks. This podcast will probably end up being a little bit longer than most of the others. Maybe not. You know, this is my first one. So thanks for listening. Also, make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. I'd really appreciate it. And listen for my next episode where I'm going to cover my do not draft list and my analysis of my second mock draft. See ya.